In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Nice shooting.
Well, I thank you, John. We want to keep our torpedoes on target. Today, I am Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski. We welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues.
Well, light hearts and light heads go together.
Of evolution and creation, because that's what we like to talk about.
We do.
We spend time thinking about it.
We do. We sit in our chairs and we think about the great questions of life.
Like giant brains just at your disposal every week.
We're here to help.
We're here to help. That's correct. And to actually, Stan, we kind of gave a little hint in our little back and forth
intro there. Yeah,
yes,
okay.
On the theme for today, it's actually involves
in
a giant thinker.
A giant thinker and a chair that he sits in. And we're talking about none other than the great physicist Stephen Jay Hawking. And his influence on the subject of origins has certainly been significant. We've talked about it before, but he's kind of come out with some new ideas or new, well, maybe not so new so much as restated and maybe underlined.
He kind of has taken the final leap. Short step. It was a leap. It wasn't really a leap of faith as much as it was just a trip over his own ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But he kindly finally put into print what he probably had felt even years ago when he came out with his book, A Brief History of Time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the final push of his new book that he co-wrote with a guy named Herzog is related to the fact that he has de-evolved as far as a human species.
Yes.
In other words, he's under the suffering of ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Well, it's a very tough, very difficult thing.
And the type he has has just left him basically, he can't speak. He has a voice synthesizer, communication computer, and he sits in this chair that basically keeps him alive, you know, in the sense that he's on almost a form of life support.
And because he can't physically do much, if anything, what he can do is think a lot. And he has continued to think on the subjects of physics and the universe and Big Bang and where things came from. He has felt his physics training as, I suppose, qualified him to think about some of the philosophical things that go with these. And he's certainly thought a lot about the philosophy.
And that's where we believe he sort of, I guess, fell into an abyss of nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what we're saying is that, you know, he is suffering and his book is kind of a rant against the idea of God.
Mm-hmm.
God cannot exist and God doesn't exist. Get used to it, folks.
Yep. Science
works. There is no God. Science works in the beginning, not hydrogen like Carl Sagan, but in the beginning, gravity.
Gravity, gravitas. And, you know, it's hard for us as spiritual people, obviously, to think of Stephen's situation without noting his personal journey of suffering.
You know, that's a mistake that a lot of people often make is you take a person out of their context. And we've talked about Darwin's history.
Oh, Darwin's anxiety attacks,
And what we're going to find is a parallel history as far as a history of pain and suffering in the life of Hawking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Hawking, you know, he suffered because of ALS, he's been in a state of general deterioration since his late teen, early 20s. Somewhere in there, he started getting ravaged by the effects of it. He eventually, his wife, went through a divorce. He was abandoned.
Yeah, terrible losses, horrible losses that anybody would feel sympathetic toward.
And you really, you can't separate those kinds of losses and those kinds of struggles with
your worldview.
Your worldview, or your thinking in general.
Cosmology, yep.
Those are the things that just really
How could it not affect
existence?
How could it not affect, and how could it not, shall we say, shape the questions anyway? And in his case, the great thinker that he is, and the great proponent of the Big Bang and so forth, it took him down some fairly expected roads. And
you know,
he's kind of crystallized these in his latest book.
And basically, I think the current situation of the world and human events has also further, I think he's jumped on some popular bandwagons that he really hasn't studied thoroughly.
Yeah.
Has a big
some
brain.
Talking points. Yeah.
And so he basically comes along with the same talking points of that, you know, world terrorism is fueled by religion.
So get rid of religion.
Get rid of religion and we'll solve world terrorism.
If humankind can just evolve past religion, get rid of this God thing, how much better a species will we be?
Yeah. And then also he'll go with the idea of, he buys into global warming. He's afraid that mankind's going to destroy the planet. And but really, if you don't believe in God, who cares? Like, hello, my father, big deal.
Yeah, eat, drink, and be merry, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
and finally, you know, and not only have that, you have nuclear weaponry and stuff like that too. That, you know, to him, environmentally, the world's in rough shape, and sociologically, it's in rough shape. And but the reality is, we believe that personally, his life was in rough shape, and that was the largest factor. And so we get kind of back to some degree to the idea of pain and suffering.
Yes.
And how that can shape, twist, and distort a person's thinking.
But it doesn't necessarily have to. And here's the thing, and this is one of the conundrums that I find these great minds face. For instance, we have the great Christian philosopher C.S. Lewis, who likewise went down a path that had personal suffering and loss. He lost his wife in a tragic way, and he tried to come to grips with the issues of where does pain and suffering come from. And, of course, he wrote the great book, Problem of Pain, The Problem of Pain, and came to a much different conclusion than Hawking did.
So just because you have a big brain doesn't mean you necessarily will come to the
right.
same conclusion.
Right, and the same losses and so
of
forth.
Life and existence
exactly.
and pain and suffering.
And so why is it that the same data, shall we say, gets looked at with two different frameworks, two different worldviews?
Yeah, and that's because of what you allow your worldview to state to you. You know, if you've already ruled out a priori-wise the supernatural, i.e. Hawking said there is no God, and so therefore...
So you've got to make sense of everything without that.
Yeah, you got to make sense with life without the Bible, or without other sources of information which claim authority. The authority becomes then the authority of your own mind and your own abilities to, whether it be in physics, whether it be in biology, whether it be whatever, that becomes your final authority, and you exclude other paths. It's kind of like we kind of say that going into the darkness with no map, you know.
Yeah, without a flashlight. And, you know, God has said that thy word is a lamp unto my feet, a light unto my path. We need that kind of light. When God said, let there be light, he is a source of light. We think about Darwin, Charles Darwin's losses also, but and that he was supposedly trained to be a minister. But, John, the historical context of mid-1800s, Cambridge University, they had already pretty much ruled the Bible out as a source of divine inspiration, more of a
human musings of spiritual ideas.
You know, and just some nice stories and everything, but they took the historicity out of the Bible, and because of that, Darwin had no great answers for his own personal pain. And, and Lucifer, that's just sort of a concept of
Darwin's knowledge of Scripture was quite limited, actually. So he didn't have a good, I think, a good grasp of the source that he was supposed to have followed in theology. And then, and the irony is, he wasn't the greatest scientist educated in the sciences either.
He was
a good observer. He had some good.
He was a great observer.
He was a great observer on details in life, but as far as actual scientific training and theological training, he was kind of a B team or C team type of intellect.
He did the best he could, maybe, with his worldview and his framework and the training he had. You know, one of the things we worry about, obviously, is when you have a great mind like Stephen Hawking, you wonder what's the effect of just knowledge, you know, just an overwhelming
brain power.
Yeah, you know, IQ off the scale and so forth. It's interesting. I have heard skeptics say that the Bible's not big on education. You know, there's not a lot of pro-education texts. And I'm thinking one of the things that they're thinking about is 1 Corinthians 8:1, where it says, knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And, of course, the word edifies means builds
build up.
So knowledge puffs up. And so what is there about knowledge just by itself that maybe is dangerous?
Well, knowledge is basically, when we're talking here, the biblical idea of knowledge here in this sense is probably what we'd call more like information. And when you can master a lot of information, you start
thinking you're pretty sharp.
Confidence Hey, you think you're smarter than the average guy next to you? You know, he's kind of an idiot. He doesn't know.
He doesn't know E equals MC squared.
And so, who is he? And I can think through bigger things than you, and I also have a greater command of information than you. And there is, we say knowledge is power, but the Bible will say that kind of power is vanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because when power is based on the exercise of a person who really is whose moral capacities have been, scarred or impaired, knowledge and power are dangerous things. And, it's like giving the proverbial 3-year-old or toddler the finger on the button to blow up a bomb.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
You're asking for trouble.
Well, there's
sooner
that.
Or later, he's going to push it.
Well, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, according to Scripture, and there is something that we can find. Jesus said, "Seek and ye shall find," and there must be something to that. I just wonder if those that kind of follow Hawking's path, shall we say, and glum onto his worldview and remove God from the picture. I'm just wondering if they're truly seeking. I would like to think that they would knock on every door to try to find answers.
No. If you don't want to, they're avoiding certain doors because of what they know or believe might be on the other side of the door. Because if the reality is, if God exists in their mind, as I see it, all of a sudden there's a being who's smarter, bigger, larger. And I'm no longer the final authority on my existence, and therefore I become accountable and
you
dependent.
Drop down a step or two on the totem pole.
I become dependent on that, and it's interesting that the last area that Hawking isn't dependent on anybody for, at least in his own thinking, is his ability to think. He doesn't subject his ability to think to other forms of knowledge, other branches of knowledge, or other sources of knowledge, like God himself and
because
his word.
Because that's a source of control or power for him.
There's a control issues involved here. And I think it's more comfortable to be in charge of my own destiny, even if it is a bleak one, than to have the idea that, you know, if I just made a few changes, I might, you know, cover my bases anyway.
Well, you know, I just wonder, and with Darwin's case, I've often thought in my own mind, I wonder why he didn't seek a little bit more from, let's say, the biblical source of where pain and suffering come from, because the Bible makes it clear the reason that there is pain and suffering in this universe is God has subjected himself to the possibility of problems with his creatures by allowing them to choose, the freedom to choose, and Lucifer
free will. It's irony, though, of all the people that cannot exercise free will, it's Stephen Hawking, which may be part of the bone that he has to pick. He doesn't have the free will to get up and go places and do things without the assistance. He's completely dependent on other people except for his brain. So he has control issues, and there may be a resentment, a deep-seated resentment, and a deep hurt that we hate to allow people to see our vulnerability and our weaknesses, because somehow there's a personal value. We get lessened as a valuable person when people see our weaknesses. At least we think that, I believe.
So he's standing behind his intellect as his shield, kind of his
that's his defense.
His defense.
I'm smarter than you.
Okay, and that's the way he values himself. And yet at some level, you know, he struggles with this because there's no perfect peace. You know, the wicked, it says, are basically, there's no peace for the wicked. He doesn't know that perfect peace.
No, you have to come to the God who gives you a peace beyond understanding.
Not as the world gives.
Not as the world gives. And that comes from Jesus Christ. So we hope that you will find that peace, and that you will stop the stonewalling, so to speak.
Trust God. Trust in him.
Tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.